Tune in to The Divine Frequency. Chip and Lisa St. Clair help you turn your passion into purpose. This is The Divine Frequency on Empower Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Chip and Lisa St. Clair.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Divine Frequency. This is Chip St. Clair, and I'm here with my wife and best friend always, Lisa. So for the next half hour, we are going to guide and inspire you to tune out the static, to tune out the drama of life, and tune back into that frequency at which you were meant to resonate, the divine frequency. What does it mean to be tuned into the divine frequency? It means a life without lasting emotional pain, without doubt, without guilt. It means a life of truth and peace, of treasured friendships, of happy marriages, of successful careers, and of complete contentment. It is our paradise, our Eden, our heaven on earth. Yes, this is a show about getting past the past, getting out of your own way, and getting back onto the road to a life of meaning, of purpose, and success. Yet life is a struggle to tune into, let alone maintain the divine frequency, isn't it? And let's be clear here, Lisa and I are no different. We too are constantly bombarded with static that threatens to drown out the frequency of truth and peace that we know exists for each one of us. Remember our analogy of that old-fashioned radio with the knobs you have to turn just right to tune into the station you want? You have to keep adjusting that dial, tweaking it one way or another, just enough to get it right. You can't just give up and settle for a little bit of static, can you? No, because even a little static can quickly become a lot of static, and you can't listen to your favorite show with static in the background. And then suddenly, you can't hear the message you were meant to hear at all. So today, once again, let's quiet our minds. Let's adjust that dial and tune out the static. Close our eyes and visualize a place of tranquility, a place without drama, a place of complete harmony within. Today, Lisa and I are in a sprawling grassy meadow. It's the peak of summertime, and we just had the most amazing picnic. Now, the only thing left to do is to stretch out and lay back on a checkered blanket, relaxed and full of great food, and watch the big lumps of cotton lumber across the sky of satiny blue. Can you picture it? Hey, what's that cloud look like to you, Lisa?
Kind of looks like a man with a bow and arrow to me. How about you?
Oh, yeah. I kind of see what you're saying. I was thinking it looks a little bit like a bison. Or is that a buffalo? I can never tell the two apart. And as always, we have our producer Dylan here with us. But instead of laying down and looking at the clouds, he decided he wants to fly a kite he brought. So he's running across the meadow trying to get it to take off. Yep, there it goes. The wind looks perfect for kite flying. Wow, look how high it's getting. So this is our first two-part episode on a very important topic, something that Lisa and I are asked about all the time in our travels and our lectures, getting your marriage to resonate at the divine frequency. How have we navigated my tumultuous past, finding out at the age of 22, 6 years into our relationship, because remember, Lisa and I met in high school. 6 years into our relationship, when I found out my brutal father was one of America's most wanted fugitives, and that my entire life had been a lie, even my own name being an alias made up by my parents during my life on the run with them, unknowingly. How have we managed to navigate all of that static, along with all the static of the baggage that I brought into our relationship due to having such a dysfunctional childhood? How have we gotten through all of that to have a happy, loving marriage based on mutual respect and strong communication? So you may recall that being our theme of our last show, communication, we talked about how we express our energy signatures to one another. And by energy signatures, for those of you new to our program, if this is your first time tuning in, we are referring to the fundamental basis of our show, the scientific principle that we, as quantum physicists, have concluded are all beings of energy, held together at the subatomic level by nothing but a particular frequency of vibration. As solid as we seem, our eyes deceive us. It's all based on the harmony of the frequency, that particular energy signature of subatomic particles and their neighbors. That's what holds us together. Hence, we call that the divine frequency here. And so we propose that if such a scientific principle is true at the subatomic level, shouldn't it also apply to us at our level, in our daily lives, in our relationships? Now, getting back to last week's show, we talked about how we demonstrate those energies to one another. How do we show others what wavelength we are on?
Communication.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so we established that communication is the key to our relationships with others. Seems like a no-brainer, right? I mean, how else are we going to connect with others outside of the broad scope of communication? Gestures, body language, our words.
Our looks.
Yeah.
Emails, texts.
Even social media. With so many ways to express how we feel, you'd think we'd all be getting along swimmingly, right? Especially those we are closest to. Those interpersonal relationships that we choose to be in. Not the familial relationships that we're born into, but those we choose. Then why is it that the divorce rate in the U.S. is so doggone high? The American Psychology Association, the APA, shows current divorce rates around 50%. Half of all marriages end in divorce. And for those on their second or third marriage, the statistics of failure are even more staggering. Now, our regular listeners know that Lisa and I are deeply embedded in the successful marriage camp, thankfully. We're in the other 50%. We've been together since high school, for a whopping 23 years, married for 16 years, on Valentine's Day, mind you, 1999. I think I just heard Dylan go, aw, all the way from across the meadow. Thanks, Dylan. No matter where we travel, it never fails that we are asked, how do you do it? What is your secret? How can I get my relationship to the point where you guys are at? Well, keep it tuned right here on the Divine Frequency, and we'll tell you. Our regular listeners also know that to get to this point, for Lisa and I, it was no cakewalk, with my family background especially. I had no idea what love was or what a healthy marriage looked like. I mean, my family dynamics, my father was an extreme chauvinist. My mother waited on him hand and foot. Even for holidays, he would sit in his lazy boy chair with a TV tray and Thanksgiving dinner on that TV tray watching a football game or whatever. And my mother would bring him everything he would need. And my mother, getting to looking at my examples as a child of what a marriage looked like, instead of trying to ever talk to my father because he was so prone to violence and rage and so quick to snap, my mother turned to drinking. That's how she dealt with problems in the marriage. And my father used violence to communicate and disrespect. He would belittle her. He would make fun of my mother. He'd call her a drunk. Or worse, he might abuse her. And my mom was passive-aggressive. She might say things behind his back, or when he turned around, stick her tongue out at him. And then you have my father just disrespecting the boundaries of marriage and watching sleazy movies. And no matter what my mom might, her reaction might have been, he'd claim that he's a man and can do what he wants. And for me, I couldn't cry watching these things unfold when he would get violent with me or my mother. And my mother wasn't allowed to show her feelings. If she cried, he would get more violent.
And see, for me, it was the complete opposite. I couldn't even have imagined life like that. Men and women in my family were equal. And dinner time or any meal time was always at the table. And we talked about what went on during the day and different things we liked and what we planned on doing on the weekend. You know, as for household responsibilities, I think back to it, my brother, my sister, and I, we all shared the same chores, dishes, laundry, keeping our rooms cleaned. And I mean, at any given time, both my parents could be seen either cooking, cleaning, hanging clothes on the line, outside. They shared roles. It was all about working together as a family unit to keep the house looking good and things working properly. And then, you know, it's like there was a certain degree of chivalry, or what I like to call kindness and cooperation. However, I do have to say, if, you know, unless my dad were ill, you know, or sick or something, it was mainly my mom who benefited from the door being held open by my dad. But, you know, I think about when you talk about alcohol, it was used no more than probably 10 times a year, if that, in our home. You know, so if we were out to a nice restaurant or it was a special occasion, my mom might have one glass of wine. She typically didn't really finish the whole glass. She might hand it over to my dad. My dad would have a glass or two at most, wine or beer. But like I said, it was so rare that I really associated it with special occasions. And then, you know, it's like I look back to how I view the world and what I, the way I see people. And it really does go back to the way I was raised. You talk about your father and sleazy movies and all kinds of the way that he, I remember the way that he would make perverted comments to your mom on occasion. And
how was it in your
yeah, home? For me, it was, that definitely didn't happen, but it was, if there were any intimate scenes in movies, I could predict my dad's hands covering my eyes. I mean, I'd be sitting there and all of a sudden these hands would be creeping around my eyes and the scene, it was clearly going to be a scene like that. You know, he'd cover them until it was over. And same with my mom. They pretty much shielded us from all that kind of stuff. Swear words, you know, swearing was at such a minimum in our home. I can barely count maybe 20 times in my entire life up until the age of 18 that I heard my parents swear. And my dad, very little. He barely used the S word, and I'm not sure I ever heard him use the F word. So it was just a completely different dynamic than what you grew up with.
Yeah, and I feel very fortunate that I was even able to know your parents and know your dad so well, because that is how he was and how he is. I mean, he rarely swears. He rarely drinks, just socially.
And you know, sarcasm, I didn't really know what that was until I was in middle school, because everything was literal.
Do you remember that we would pull out like comic strips, you know, on the Sunday morning comics or whatever, and we'd open them up, and like The Far Side or whatever, and we'd be reading them, and I'd be laughing, and you're like, well, I don't get it.
Well, I was beside myself. I couldn't understand it. I didn't know how to read comics because I didn't understand sarcasm.
Well, because you're in your life, what you saw was what was.
Yeah.
You know, there was no subversive way to communicate a feeling. There was, people were direct.
And well, and now as an adult, it's hilarious, and we go over it, and it's all brand new to me, but yeah.
Isn't it funny how sarcasm, it's such a, it's so embedded as a means of humor in our society, but it really is a way to cope with not being able to deal with something, with frustration. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, for us in our relationship, to top it off, in those 6 years before we learned my father's true identity, before we learned that he was one of America's most wanted, a fugitive on the run, a child killer, my father had made it his personal mission to destroy our relationship. Remember that?
Yeah, and see, at the time I didn't know that, but after a few times of your parents canceling our plans to see each other, it started to make me think a bit. I remember going to my mom and crying about how your parents didn't seem to like me, and my mom would remind me that you're an only child, and maybe they were just afraid of me taking their only son away. So it did make sense to me, and we spent an awful lot of time talking on the phone with one another, and sometimes into the wee hours of the night. So I could see how that might have built up a little bit of frustration to them. So do you remember when I decided that one day to have flowers sent to them as a kind gesture to kind of let them know that I respected them and I had no ill intentions. Mm. I wanted them in my life, and
yeah, he twisted that around to make it look like you were being manipulative, trying to, I don't know, bribe them, trying to impress them falsely.
Well, as a teenager, I mean, what other way could I have comforted my, you know, my boyfriend's parents? My primary goal obviously was to see you, but I also knew that I cared about you a lot, and we may have had a future together, and I wanted to somehow, put their mind at ease that, I mean, I had good intentions, and I definitely wanted to be able to enjoy time with them as well. So,
well, remember, there was that other time when, early on, I don't exactly recall what happened, but, you wanted to call my dad to have just like a heart-to-heart with him,
yeah.
You know, because as we talk about, communication is the most important thing. And maybe I think you were wondering if your message just wasn't getting through to my father.
Yeah, he was forbidding you to see me, and I couldn't understand why. And I just remember he had given me his work number. Somehow I had it in case if there were any situation where I'd need to call your parents from work. And
I mean, this is a couple years into us dating.
Yeah, and I remember calling him, and I'd asked the secretary if I could speak with Mr. St. Clair, and he got on the phone and was really nice to me. It seemed like everything was going well, and I told him that I cared about you, and that I, you know, just kind of coming from the point of view that they might have been having, and that I enjoyed time with them, and if they had any concerns, that I just love being a part of their family and your family, and I enjoyed just the time that we had. And it ended up where he was just so complimentary, and you know, well, I'm going to talk to Chip, and as soon as I get home, don't you worry about it. He'll give you a call, and you know, we think the world of you, Lisa, and you're a real sweet girl. And I was just beaming after that phone call. I felt like I finally got through. I finally felt understood.
Mm.
And then I waited for your phone call, and it never came. It never came. And I decided, yeah, well, maybe somehow there was a misunderstanding or something. I couldn't understand. I called you.
Yeah. Yeah, what you didn't know, of course you know now, but see, and for listeners who aren't familiar completely with my story, our story, my father was an incredible sociopath. And so he made Lisa feel as if she was, you know, a princess. He complimented her. He thanked her. He was very kind and gracious on the phone. But when they hung up, he turned to me and said, what a manipulative, you know, using the B word, and called her all sorts of vulgar names. And he said, you should have heard, Chip. She called up and said, I want to speak with David Michael St. Clair. And the funny thing was, you didn't even know his middle name. You didn't even know his middle name, did you?
Yeah. And how do you argue that? How do you fight that? I mean, I that just came out of left field. I had no idea how to deal with someone like that and how to defend myself.
Well, especially when
like
a parent
that.
Is telling you something, you're more likely to believe your parent, yeah. even though, you know, there's all kinds of other evidence to the contrary, that what they might be saying might not be as reliable. But, you know, my father was a strong presence in my life, as most fathers are, and
sure,
for kids. And so it was very tough for me. So after I found out that my father was one of America's most wanted fugitives, and in those dark hours, January 22nd, 1998, I turned him in. The battle for our relationship was really just beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, as I was raised, I admittedly had carried a lot of baggage into our relationship. I mean, I had a pretty short temper. I'd get frustrated easily. I'd get annoyed easily. I mean, my only example of a woman was my mother, who was incredibly passive aggressive, and my father always made it seem like everything she did was annoying and irksome, and you know, and so I found myself falling into those same roles that I had seen, and I shut down my emotions. My walls were up to you. I remember treating conversations with sarcasm, you know, being hurtful, even mocking you.
Yeah. Well, you know, you had a very gentle temperament for the most part, but it was when there was tension or, you know, confusion that's when things would become irrational. And so I was very reactive, and I had no idea how to deal with irrationality. Sometimes it would seem like out of nowhere, your mood would change from happy to irritable. And so I would revert to tactics that weren't healthy for the marriage. You know, like the name calling and eye rolling and anything that I thought would make you think about it from my point of view. So, you know, it really was, I had to realize in order to reach you, I was going to have to stop reacting and focus on the solution to find more sincere and respectful way of addressing a problem.
Yeah, it was muddying up the waters. And, you know, like so many marriages and intimate relationships, it wasn't any one great thing that was creating the static and threatening to destroy our life together. It was a compilation of many things, all the little things that, when added up, proved to be too much. As the saying goes, death by a thousand cuts. But what was the solution? And what did we uncover about our relationship and about ourselves that brought us closer to the divine frequency? Well, that's why it's a two-part episode, folks. We're unfortunately running low on time right now. And while we normally would pack up our belongings and head off to our next virtual destination, we're going to wait for you right here in this meadow, just laying back on our blanket while Dylan runs to and fro across the field with that kite of his still in the air. We'd like to thank you for tuning into this episode of The Divine Frequency. Remember, next week will be part two of our episode, Getting Your Marriage to Resonate at the Divine Frequency.
And we're proud to say that the Divine Frequency is made possible by our advocate. Have you or someone you know been injured, such as a car accident or a slip and fall? That's when you need to you need legal help, call 586-997-HELP. These are compassionate and yet smart injury lawyers who think the way you do. They call it injury law healing. That's 586-997-HELP. There's no fee unless you win.
Well, we want to thank Empower Radio, as always. And my also, we'd like to throw a shout-out to my good friend and fellow Empower host, John Schalter and Carrie Schalter, who have an amazing show themselves called The Butterfly Moment. If you haven't already, I encourage you to tune into that show. It will change your life. Also, a shout-out to our producer, Dylan Lavelle, who makes everything happen on our excursions, even with one hand flying a kite. It's pretty amazing. You can listen to archived episodes of The Divine Frequency on EmpowerRadio.com. And for more information on our work with the St. Clair Butterfly Foundation, you can visit scbf.org. Or to check out what I've been up to, visit chipstclair.com. Take your life back, not as it could be, but as it should be. Keep tuning in to The Divine Frequency.